Hello and welcome to the Long Road Podcast. The journey goes ever on with the Long Road, brought to you by Artisan Creative. This episode, we just start at the beginning. Join Steve Bonham, Kev Moore and Chris the Bishop Lydon for a riveting discussion on the electrifying compilation album Hard Country, out now. Steve delves into the concept of a vagabond heart. Kev shares his final day on the Camino Trail, and the Bishop, that's me, I tackle a pizza dough dilemma head on. The Long Road Podcast, where authenticity meets adventure. Join Steve Bonham, Kev Moore and me, Chris the Bishop Lydon, from the renegade Americana band The Long Road, as we defy stereotypes with our very own brand of quirkiness and rebellion, shaking off the stereotypes of sex, drugs and suffering. Get ready for ridiculous tales, offbeat musings, downright daft moments. Tune in for laughs, tunes and a rebellious spirit. Hop on the wild ride with The Long Road Podcast from Artisan Creative. Greetings, I am Chris the Bishop Lydon. Welcome back to episode 70. What news, pray tell? Well, our new compilation album, which is called Hard Country, is out now on streaming or for downloads. Head to thelongroadband.net and check out our discography and you'll see it all there. 9 tracks of our heavier side. Acoustic but thumping. Keep your eyes peeled for a special edition vinyl version coming later in the summer. You can actually help us right now by pre-ordering from the Artisan Creative website. Head to artisan-creative.com/shop. Don't forget, if you like what we do in general, consider buying us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/longroadband. You could support all things Artisan Creative at our Patreon, patreon.com/artisancreative. Now, before we get into our three-way chat, we're going to inject some music right into your auditory veins right here, right now. Perhaps randomly, perhaps chaotically, we're going to pick a track of the week to play for you. As this is a podcast from a rock and roll band, from our new release album, Hard Country. The three of us talking about that album in more detail in our three-way chat. But here is one of our more bonkers tracks. Lyrically, certainly bonkers. Musically, yeah, it's a bit bonkers as well. Here are the words from the chorus, just in case you need them clarifying. Dragons in the night, turtles in the sea, canyons in the desert looking good to me. Dancing on the boulevard way down in New Orleans. Turn sideways to the sun, let the Joker steal the scene.
When the wind is howling outside your door, friends you can count on, you're not quite so sure. You find you're standing on the wrong side of the road. Girl, put down your heavy load. On singing, but you're getting it wrong. You remember the words, but have forgotten the song. When you can't make the choices from the things that they showed, girl, put down your heavy load. Dragons in the night, turtles in the sea, canyons in the desert looking good to me. Dancing on the boulevard way down in New Orleans. Turn sideways to the sun and let the Joker steal the scene. When there's too much that's playing inside of your head, late night confusion going on in your bed. It's time to move out, a time to reload. Girl, put down. Dragons in the night, turtles in the sea, canyons in the desert looking good to me. Dancing on the boulevard way down in New Orleans. Turn sideways to the sun and let the Joker steal the scene. When the bat that is flying like a shot in the night, whatever you're doing it right. Take the love to where the deep waters flow. Girl, put down your heavy load. Dragons in the night, turtles in the sea,
joke is still the same.
Everybody, we are back, the three of us together in our digital meeting space to talk some nonsense again for you to enjoy on the podcast. We've got Steve at home in Derbyshire. Steve, how are you?
Bonjour, mes amis.
Bonjour.
Bonjour, ça va?
Now, I thought you had another language brewing there, but maybe not.
I did, but it went completely out of my head.
Right. Kev at home in Spain. Kev, how are you?
Hello, Dave.
For the fans of the League of Gentlemen.
Very good. So here we are. Now, it's a special week, really. We've been leading up to this week for years, really. Yes. I mean, if people really want to look at it, it's probably been 7 years in the brewing, but we didn't know about it. Now, I'm talking about the release of our latest album, which is called Hard Country, which is kind of a... it's a culmination of, it's a drawing together of, it's a celebration of years of our work together, really, isn't it? Yeah. Now, Steve, this album was basically your idea. Uh-huh. So why don't you tell us a little bit about where it comes from, really, Hard Country?
You know, I think we've said before, I've always been obsessed with loud acoustic music. You know, and for some reason we've got into a world where, if you want to go heavy, you plug it into the wall. But I've always hankered after the notion that you could be heavy and acoustic until I met you guys. I never saw the way. But you showed me the light, as you do in so many things. Because acoustic music have this great quality of sounding raw. You know, a plectrum on a string, or a hammer hitting a wire, or a piece of wood thumping a bit of old goat has great resonance. We did that. We boiled that down over those three albums that are, we've drawn from on this particular collection. I just think it's really exciting. I really think this is some of the... I'm so proud of this music because I just think it's got balls, doesn't it?
Mm.
And it's got an edge to it, and it's not Tweedly D.
I think that's the thing. Often when people hear acoustic, they think Tweedly D, light, sort of backgroundy stuff, nothing that's going to cut through to the core of anything. But I think our stuff has always had this intention of cutting through various things.
I think some of the tracks on there are almost visceral.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Those particular tracks, a thread that runs through those three albums, those songs have sort of coalesced into this new project. It's basically they hang together by their intent. So sometimes we're talking about heavy subjects in those songs, and the music has to act as a companion to that telling of the tale. You know, it has to set the background in terms of mood. And I think we really do get to that on that album. That, you know, when you hear those songs together as a collective, it probably even gives them a greater power than when they've been scattered throughout the previous three albums.
Yeah, because it's sort of, I mean, some of these tracks go back to the first collaboration, really, that the three of us did.
Pretty much, yeah.
You've known each other for forgive me, decades, and I've only known Steve for a couple of decades, really. And Kev, I've only known you for about one decade now.
Yeah.
So the recording of the tracks for Reliance and Rattlesnake, which actually, correct me if I'm wrong, I can't even really remember whether we knew what we were doing with them back then. Even
it's a frightening thing for the band's bank balance that we never have any idea of where the end is. We just start at the beginning, which I suppose is...
You've got to start somewhere.
You've got to start somewhere. So, I don't think we ever... We're the two albums that made Reliance and Rattlesnake. I don't think we ever thought there'd be two albums until we found we had 30 tracks or whatever it is. And we thought,
the beauty of not knowing your musical destination is taking the journey, isn't it?
And even then, even back then, I remember thinking the threads that intertwine between these songs. I mean, because the music me and Steve have been making for 20, you know, when we first started making stuff, you see threads sort of emerging. You zoom out and go, there's these threads between these songs. And even I remember thinking about Rattlesnake and Reliance. There's threads that link them together into their little worlds. Mm. But then when we got on to doing some of the later stuff, which went on to American Wilderness, the bigger 15-track project that we did sort of in 2020 and throughout the lockdowns and things, the threads that then emerge between some of those things back from 2017-18, where we'd only just started off on those journeys, those threads re-emerge in American Wilderness. And in fact, there's a brand new song on Hard Country called Ain't Gonna Fake It, which I can't remember, when did we record that now? Did we record that during lockdown? Was that?
I think we recorded it at the tail end of a session, didn't we? Timing was very fortuitous because Steve kind of had some kind of verse chords and stuff and probably a bit of chorus and no lyrics. And I just poured out this lyric as I was about to set off on the Camino. And it was quite a liberating lyric for me. And I stuck a middle eight in there and suddenly we had a song. But it was kind of, we'd already done a project. So it's nice that this can sort of see the light of day because it's a perfect sort of flagship for Hard Country, isn't it? It's really us giving it large in the acoustic
world, If we're gonna be can we be a wee bit controversial? Can we be a bit, you know,
brace yourselves?
Yeah, well, here we go. Brace yourselves. And sorry, it's like a mass united turn off. But you know, a lot of country music has become pants over the last few years. It used to be, you know, country was the kind of equivalent of the blues. It was raw. It was in your face. It was kind of reportage, if that's not too poncy a word, of people's lives. And yet, over the last 10, 15 years, it's become a bit more. It's become basically soft rock. You know,
a lot of
young people noodling about how upset they are. And, you know... And,
well, it's fallen victim to anodyne, hasn't it?
And
was there not that thing on the internet recently? I think we might have talked about it, Steve, where they overlaid about 20 current country songs over each other and you couldn't bloody tell. It just sounded like one song.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine trying to overlay, say, half a dozen of our songs?
And what, oh, my God.
It would be impossible.
Literally, just started to think about doing that. Looking at the track listing for Hard Country.
Yeah.
So there's 9 tracks on there. And, you know, I'm hard pushed to sort of say which ones are my favourite. I mean, if I gun to my head, which ones are my favourite? I couldn't do it, really. But so the first half starts with Girl with a Rattlesnake Heart. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first heard that, it sort of blows my mind as to where that came from on our landscape. And then Moonshine Running. Oh, well, it's got this autobiographical element to it, hasn't it, I suppose?
And the story. I mean, a lot of them are stories, and that's the great tradition, isn't it? That's what made us love this sort of music.
If there's anything the Long Road is, it's story-driven, isn't it?
Yeah. I think people in the UK, outside of the country music community, can be very dismissive of country music, and they can point at some of the anodyne stuff and say, well, that's not really... You know, the heart of it, you know, and the early guys, people, you know, like Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
You don't get more in your face than that man, you know, Folsom Prison Blues and, you know, those sorts of things. Yeah. Hard, hard music, you know, and it wasn't easy. And, you know, and great people like Woody Guthrie.
Yes.
It's edge, you know, it's edge and it's, you know, and it's folk music and it's rock music. Basically, it's folk music with some welly behind it, which is, in a sense, what we've done here, you know. There's some great fellow travellers in this stuff. You know, whether you call it country music or not, but there are some fellow travellers, and I hope we can sort of take succour from each other. I don't know what Springsteen would say if he heard this, and of course, very unlikely he ever will, but I think he might think, I know where you boys are coming from.
Yeah, I hope to think so, yeah. And it's a great collection of stories, you know. I think it does even though it's a compilation per se.
I think for me, they all paint these really vivid pictures.
Yeah.
And sometimes those pictures might feel like they're sort of, you know, LSD induced, perhaps. Not that I've ever taken LSD myself. And then some of them are a bit more tangible. The last track, Western Requiem, has got such a cinematic feel to me. It feels like it's the sort of thing you can almost literally reach out and you can touch it. You know what it's going to feel like. Things like Canyons in the Desert, slightly more of that former category, perhaps, LSD-induced. Wondering.
Yeah.
I'm having flashbacks to when we talked about it on the podcast in the past, and I think Steve was hanging upside down off his sofa or something like that.
Yeah. Indeed, I was. If you hear, I stooped so low that everywhere looked up.
I mean, I look back at Canyons and I just think, how did we write that song? Because it's,
how did we get that?
It's completely,
it's bonkers.
It's quite unique, I think, that song. It's quite unique.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is the potential of there being a volume two of this, because we have a bunch of other tracks that we haven't included because we just haven't got space. We wanted to try to keep things to fit onto vinyl, because that's the plan, is we're going to do a special edition vinyl release later on in the year.
Yeah, pre-order on site.
Yeah, pre-order. Keep a lookout for that, because that would be very well worth having.
The other thing is, because we know we've got a bunch of other songs that we can include, there'll be links, there'll be threads linking from this Hard Country album to whatever the second one's called, Harder Country, whatever we jokingly named it earlier on, and things like Canyons linking to some of the stuff that we've done in the last couple of years, the sort of bizarre, the weirder, extreme bits. I really enjoy finding those connections. I look forward to sharing that sort of weirdness with people. Yeah. But then, you know, you've got these big, huge ones like Ballad of Dwayne and Billy Marie. Huge storytelling, trek through the forest.
I mean, there's a place in music, of course, for the odd throwaway lyric and the repetitive sing-along.
Yeah.
But it is, I always enjoy sort of what's the next verse going to tell us, you know, where are we going to end up with this one? And
I don't feel like we're guilty of throwaway lyrics, really.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I think that's one of our strengths. So people dismiss the writing of a lyric at their peril, you know.
Final thought on Hard Country. If we each had to pick a track to introduce somebody into the sort of the world of the Long Road that is on Hard Country, if you had to pick a single track, what would you pick? Steve, I'm going to go to you first.
No, right,
put you on the spot here.
That's hard. Do you know, I'm suspecting Kev's going to choose the other one, so I'm going to start with Waiting on a Storm.
Okay, right.
Because I remember really well writing that song, and it was a time in my life where I was pretty convinced the world had fallen on my head anyway.
Yes.
And I was sitting in this house that I was in, and I just started to play that song, and I just thought, yeah, I know exactly what this song is and where it's coming from, and I just think it's always had that lovely groove to it. Yeah. All the playing that, you know, from you guys is exquisite, isn't it? And it's a damn good country blues song.
Absolutely. Kev, what would you pick?
It's like you, Bish. It's so hard to pick a favourite.
Pick one that's going to introduce somebody to the world of the Long Road.
Yeah,
or
I'd probably go for the new one. Ain't Gonna Fake It, because it was just from my own perspective to be able to get my thoughts into that feel of the Long Road. Exactly when I needed to do it, that sense of freedom and finding the open road and just it kind of sings out. It really sings out, and we're all just hammering along on that track, and that I think that's why it's a nice addition as if you like a bonus sort of new track on that compilation. It kind of draws all the strings together for me.
And so now I'm really hard pressed to what which one I would choose, because something like the opening track, "Girl with a Rattlesnake Heart," I think says a lot about what this whole thing is about.
Mm-hmm.
And then the opposite end, "Western Requiem," which is the closing track. Mm-hmm. Again, like I said earlier on, has this very cinematic, very palpable picture painting for me in that one. The world that it conjures up is just, you know, stunning to me. So I, gun to my head, I'd go for "Western Requiem." And in the course of editing this, I'll pick one of those three to play as the track play out at the end of the second floor.
And here's the one I ended up choosing, Waiting on a Storm.
There's a humming on the wires, a whisper on the wind. Remember me and Mary, first time we sinned. Oh my Lord, those times were good. We were going away, it was understood.
I was about 17 years old. I was about to head off to the south of France with my old mate Tim. We're going to go busking along the cafes by the side of the sea. Two hopeless hustlers living a dream. Just before we went, a friend, another Tim, gave me a book and said, "Here, you'll enjoy this." Now, Tim had more books than any other person I knew, and most of them were interesting and different. There were not many thrillers there. They were quirky and odd, and I loved talking to him about them. So I put the book in a guitar case and set off. A few days later in the afternoon, hanging about outside the tent, waiting for the evening to start and to head down to the harbour front to play, I got out the book and looked at it for the first time. It was called Nulp, and it was by Hermann Hesse. It's not a very long book. I don't think, if I recall, it's more than 130 pages. And it's an odd story about a talented tramp who wanders from town to town, welcomed wherever he goes, but never staying anywhere for long. Nulp is an odd, warm, wonderful character who everybody recognises contains something of themselves, the bit of them that they had denied. I have to say, reading that book with a glass of beer beside myself in the south of France did change my life. I recognised the echoes that Nulp's life held for me and for others. The choices I had to make as I stared out across the mountain range of all that lay before me. And I was determined from that moment on to be more like him, for Nulp had a special purpose. Towards the end of the book, Nulp is lying, dying in the snow, thinking about all the things he might have been and perhaps he should have been. And he talks to God saying, "Well, what was the point of all this? What should I have done?" And God, whoever God may be, the universal voice says, "Let well enough alone. What's the good of complaining? I wanted you the way you are and no different. You were a wanderer in my name. And wherever you went, you brought the settled folk, a little nostalgia for freedom in my name, a little nostalgia for freedom." And I knew straight away that this was the heart of my dilemma for the rest of my life and for everyone around me. It seems our choice, our paradox, is to live the life of a vagabond or be a servant. To fit in and to fall out. Perhaps we have a servant brain and a vagabond heart. Whenever I hear people say, "Well, people don't like change," I think that's nonsense. Everyone I've ever met has liked to change. They've loved to change. They've sought change in what they wear, what they eat, what they do, where they go, who they spend time with, even what they believe. But perhaps also they are frightened of it. There's a fear in there. That fear that's exploited by the great and the good to make sure we all behave. Our servant brain says, "Well, you just mind how you go. Take care now." Our servant brain looks for certainty. It avoids risk. It's suspicious of change, feels vulnerable, likes predictability. But our vagabond heart says something that's different. Our vagabond heart sings us into being, to see a world of possibility. It delights in the unexpected. It asks us to travel lightly over this world. And in that, our vagabond heart connects us to the noble profession of the troubadour, the wanderer, the explorer, the artist, the craft worker, all who search and look for something other than that that is right in front of them. And I believe Every person has that sense of a servant brain and a vagabond heart. And over the next few weeks, join me in exploring just what this might mean.
Well, welcome once more to Kev's Cafe Corner. This is it, listeners, the last day. Well, the last day of the Camino proper. There will be some more tales to tell. But for now, this is the day that I reach Santiago de Compostela. As my trail had turned inwards from the coast a week before, I'd found myself hoping it wouldn't end. And now, here I was, within touching distance. Strange dichotomy, an unwillingness to say goodbye to it, but an eagerness to complete. Only those who walk the Camino can truly understand this conundrum. So I was up and out of the albergue around 9 a.m. I received an apology from Emile around 10 a.m. If you may remember, she was my bike vanguard earlier on the trail. She'd got some errands to run, getting some things for her boyfriend Vang's van, so she wouldn't be able to accompany me on the last bit. As I walked the last kilometres, I'd occasionally see the lads from Torre Vieca who I'd befriended the night before. I stopped for a coffee on the way and I met an American artist there who seemed fascinated by my appearance and took my photo. And I often wonder if a painted version of me is now hanging in a gallery somewhere, the mad purple-ponchoed Gandalf of the Camino. When I next encountered the Torre Vieca duo, they'd just come out of a sculpture park raving about what was inside. So I did a quick detour to check it out, and it was indeed well worth the trip. All the work of one man, and very strange it was too. Me and the lads walked together for the last few kilometres, one of them struggling a bit. We took the obligatory photo together and I smiled as we hooped and hollered in a most irreverent manner at our first sight of the magnificent Cathedral of Santiago. As we walked towards a stone arch that would take us into the square in front of this majestic old building, each of us lost in our own thoughts. As if on cue, the bells started to ring. We all looked at each other and mouthed perfecto and high five. It was an amazing moment. As we entered the shadow of the arch, a lone piper was stood there playing and I was lost in the reverie. Was I really here? Had I really walked 650 kilometres? It seemed utterly impossible. I stood in the square, dazed, looking up at that ancient church, when all at once I saw a small figure walking up to me. It was Emile. It was a hugely emotional moment for me, real and true Camino friends. We hugged. She'd had the thoughtfulness to wait for me to arrive and film me entering the square. I'll never forget that kindness. She took a photo of me holding my staff aloft, screaming with joy at the sky. Then the tears came. It was over. What was I weeping for? The loss of the person that I'd found on that trail? I don't think so. I think I've taken that person with me. And he's a wonderful life lesson. Next time. Farewell, Santiago. Hello, stark reality.
Recently made some pizza dough, but I think my scales must be a bit wonky or something, as the dough ended up being super salty, which is saying something for me, as I'm a pretty salty guy. I ended up with three balls of dough, equating to three pizzas, I suppose, and now the first I ate, and I discovered it was super salty.
And I should have known something was up, as the dough itself just really wasn't very pliable at all. The texture wasn't right. But I had a choice to make about the last two balls. Do I ditch the dough, or do I plough on through? Now, on this occasion, I actually ended up splitting the difference. One dough ball I had got out of the fridge, completely planning, fully intending to use it, but then life and time and everything got in the way, and it ended up going in the bin, unfortunately. And part of me was okay with that, as I knew it was over-salty. But for the third and final dough ball, I just couldn't quite bring myself to throw it away. It was edible, just not very tasty. So I cracked on. I avoided any sort of heavy toppings or any salty toppings. No tuna or red onion or anything like that. Just kept it simple with tomato sauce, mozzarella and basil. The final leaves off a recently purchased basil pot that was quickly dying. And, you know, the pizza was fine, you know, fine. But these things, they get me thinking about the nature of baking. What you put into things is what you get out of them, you know, practice, knowledge, intuition, instinct, all that. And ultimately, what's the goal? When I spend 4 hours overall making a loaf of bread, or, you know, 12, 18 hours getting a pizza dough ready, what am I investing in? It doesn't take too many leaps of imagination to get to my big picture idea here, so join me over here, skipping along on the clouds. But I think with baking or cooking in general, we're investing in hope. Hope. I'm sure I've talked about hope on the podcast before, but I think it bears repeating. I make a fresh loaf of bread because I'm investing a little bit in my future happiness. Hope, to be sure. Even if I buy a cheap loaf of white bread from Asda, I'm still investing in my future happiness. One of life's little treasures, for me personally, is a cheap white loaf-based bacon sandwich, for instance. Or this pizza dough I'd oversalted by accident. Damn, my investment ended up a bit wonky. But luckily, on a scale that I could cope with, you know. The only person eating it was me. I just got on with it. I ditched one of them. Ate two of them. But even then, I would work out to myself some future improvement for my method or my knowledge or something. I've always wanted to improve my pizza dough. Even in a little failure, I invest in my hope for the future. And hope is such an important part of being alive. Provided by, bolstered by, boosted by, enlivened by so many of the things we consume, you know, food, drink, media, TV shows, podcasts, radio, social activities, making music, dance, art. I was listening to a podcast recently with sculptor Anthony Gormley, and he spoke so eloquently about the state of the world today in all different aspects, and how he approached his art over the years. And one of the elements I took from what he was saying is a search for hope and sharing that search with others in a practical way, which also transpires into the sort of mystical, mythical way. When he was embarking on creating The Angel of the North, he definitely makes it clear that, yes, he seems to be the one that gets most of the credit for it, but it was a community affair. He went and spoke to people from the area that it was going to be in, from where it would be, what it could be, what it should be, and importantly, how to bloody make the thing. Generations of shipbuilding expertise in that area of the world had been trampled on in the late 20th century, and he knew instinctively to go and seek it out to build this huge sculpture. I don't know for sure, but I hope the people involved got some pleasure from knowing that they were part of this bigger thing, both a physically big thing, yes, but also a spiritually big thing. They may or may not have realised, but they were feeding hope at the time, that belief out of not great things, good can come. They may not realise they were actually feeding Anthony Gormley himself's hopes and beliefs that this project was possible and could succeed, both from an engineering point of view and from an artistic sort of communal point of view. Nearly everything we can do feeds into, or sadly drains us of, hope.
politics. Ugh, politics, politics. Politics, I think, fundamentally should be about hope. Making things better for those who are most in need. Giving hope to those who are struggling. Not to put a too finer point on it, but bring on the general election. Hope has been drained away too long in this country. We need to find hope again on that top level. So, my silly little message for this episode. Find hope wherever you can. In the pizza dough, in the community activities, or at the ballot box. It's there. It multiplies when we manifest it, and we need it in spadefuls to scoop everyone up and make the world better. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening, wherever in the world you are. Subscribe to the podcast, however you get your podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts, Acast, Spotify, YouTube, Amazon. The next episode will be out next Friday, all being well. If you fancy buying us a coffee in the meantime, you can at buymeacoffee.com/thelongroadband. Dead simple to just drop us a few quid to support what we do. It even accepts Apple Pay and Google Pay. Super easy. All of our music and merch is on Bandcamp, where you can help support a positive ecosystem for the music industry. Download, streaming, vinyl, CDs, it's all there. thelongroadband.bandcamp.com. You can get hold of our books through the Artisan Creative website. Head to artisan-creative.com. We're on Patreon at patreon.com/artisancreative. Big thank you to our current Patreons for your ongoing support. If you'd like to support us, you'll get free digital stuff and merchandise in the post if you want it. Help us create something different, something that entertains and something that inspires others. Join us on the journey. patreon.com/artisancreative. Thank you once again, brave adventurers, vagabonds and explorers, for joining us on the long road. Remember, the world isn't beige. It's authentic, it's rich, and it's real. Embrace every last bit of it. Until next time, the journey goes ever on with the long road. Bye for now.